Good evening. Professor Lawrence Tran, Deputy Vice Chancellor of the ANU. Professor Mick Dodson, Director of the National Centre for Indigenous Studies and Co-Chair of Reconciliation Australia. Representatives of Reconciliation Australia, ANU colleagues, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Stephen Bottomley. I'm Acting Dean of the ANU College of Law, and it's my great pleasure to welcome you all here this evening to the fifth annual ANU Reconciliation Lecture. The Dean of the College, Professor Michael Cooper, would have been standing here doing this tonight, but unfortunately he has to attend some meetings overseas, and he's asked me to communicate to you his apologies and his regrets that he can't be here tonight. But it's a real pleasure for me to stand in for him. It's an even greater pleasure for me to be in brief right now and to firstly introduce Matilda House-Williams, who will give welcome to country, and she will be followed immediately by Professor Lawrence Cran, the Deputy Vice Chancellor of the Australian National University. But first, Matilda House-Williams.
Thank you very much for that wonderful introduction. I would like to acknowledge elders that are here tonight, the past and the present, and also I'd like to acknowledge Mr. Mick Dodson, a tenant of mine. I haven't gone for paying the rent yet. And also for our very special guest speaker that's here tonight and doing the wonderful things that he's always done all his life, Mr. Mark Inbaker. Welcome to the land of my ancestors, to each and every one of you, the same. For those who have travelled near and far, and for those who have come from overseas, welcome, welcome, welcome. Thank you very much.
Can I also welcome guests to the ANU Reconciliation Lecture, and particularly to thank Matilda for her most gracious welcome to country. It's a great pleasure to welcome the guest speaker, Mark Bin Baker, on behalf of the ANU. I can still remember that really strange feeling of watching SBS and seeing Mary Jane thinking, what on earth is that? And it was, I think, a real high point in some of the most exciting television that's been on Australian production television for a long, long time. And I'm looking forward tonight to finding out whether it really is filmed in Broome, or whether that's all part of what it's about. Recently, I discovered the Pyram brothers as well, who I know are from Broome, and something happens in Broome if Mary Jane really comes from Broome. Something happens in Broome that seems to me to be quite important for Australian creative works, and I think it's really quite exciting to see that happening. I'd like to just say a little about the importance of the Reconciliation Lecture Series to the ANU. We have a number of important lectures and a number of important ceremonies that take place at ANU each year, and the Reconciliation Lecture is one of the most important. The first lecture was held in 2004, and each year we're honoured to have a distinguished Australian deliver the lecture. The ANU hopes that through the series we'll be able to reach out to the broader community and help us understand and think about the relationships between Indigenous and non-Indigenous Australians, and how we can walk together down the path towards true and meaningful reconciliation. I must say that it's really quite moving to reflect on the tone that many of us felt last year with the Reconciliation Lecture, and on the tone that I think we would feel now, and to just come to understand how important that single word sorry has been in the last 12 months. I think it's a turning point for Australia, and something that makes me feel quite positive and emotionally uplifted at this time, particularly compared to some of the things that we were talking about with Nick and his colleagues at this time a year ago. So it's a big change for Australia. The ANU has a long commitment to contributing to Indigenous Australia and Indigenous issues in research and education and indeed in employing Indigenous people. Our research ranges from topics like, you know, the long history of Australia, if I can put it that way, all the way through to issues of employment and social and economic justice in contemporary Indigenous Australia, conducted by our Centre for Aboriginal Australian Economic Research and other activities in Australia. We have a number of Indigenous students at ANU as undergraduates, as postgraduates studying for master's degrees and studying research degrees, and that's wonderful. Recently, we've strengthened our relationships with the University of South Australia in particular, and also with Bachelor College, and we're hoping that that will give us even more relationships with Indigenous people who would like to be associated with our education programs. The University is especially privileged to have Professor Mick Dodson as the director of our National Centre for Indigenous Studies. As Stephen said, Mick is also the co-chair of Reconciliation Australia. And at this point, it gives me great pleasure to call on Professor Dodson to introduce this year's speaker, Mick Dodson.
Thank you very much, Lawrence, and thanks to Matilda for your warm welcome. So far as the lens concerned, you better talk to Tony about that. I want to welcome you all here, particularly my distinguished colleagues and people who come from far, but particularly members of the Stolen Generation who are present with us tonight. I don't intend to speak for too long because you haven't come here to listen to me. But my task is perhaps to try and set the scene for tonight's lecture, and I wanted to say a few words about the current reconciliation environment and why the ANU and Reconciliation Australia were so keen to have Mark deliver this year's ANU Reconciliation Lecture. And some of you may have heard me in the past say that the apology we had on the 3rd of February was done because I believe our Prime Minister recognised it was the right thing to do. It was right because it acknowledged that separate governments in Australia over many years did the wrong thing and damaged, as a result, damaged people's lives. And it was right because the apology is the basis for us to build, I believe, the kind of respectful relationship we need to get better outcomes for all of us. And you sometimes hear people talk about this false divide between the so-called symbolic aspects of reconciliation and practical issues like health, housing, education, etc. But to me, the reality is that how you feel about yourself and whether you feel that your culture, your people, your history, your worldview, whether that's acknowledged and respected, I think is a key part of facing your problems and being able to turn things around. The two things go together, they're not mutually exclusive. I think the apology provides a foundation of respect that, on which we can build a proper relationship and work together to make things better. And as I've said before, it's only one piece in a complex puzzle of reconciliation. But to my mind, it's the corner piece and it helps us, helps set us on the way and leaving the picture. Now, ladies and gentlemen, Mark Binbarker is a man who works every day to build relationships, drawing on his many talents and his rich and diverse experiences, good ones and painful ones. And I know that the apology was an enormous milestone to Mark, something that he, like many others, had worked for many, many years. Mark has dedicated much of his adult life to increasing cultural understanding, and while his character, Mary G, really become a national cultural hero, Mark's been able to raise awareness of important social issues facing Indigenous people. Now, he described himself as an Aboriginal person placed in a middle position between our mob and mainstream Australia. A role he admits to being very difficult at times. I think I can relate to that. But underscoring the respect he commands across the community is the fact that he was recognised last year as the NAIDOC Indigenous Person of the Year, and is also the current West Australian of the Year. So as a fellow West Australian and Broomwood, it's a great honour for me as both Director of the National Centre for Indigenous Studies here at ANU and Co-Chair of Reconciliation Australia to introduce to you the quite remarkable Mark Dimbarco.
It's an honour to be here, and I'd like to first of all acknowledge and thank the welcoming and the dignitaries that welcomed me here, and of course everybody that turned up. So I guess last week I spent a whole week in the Northern Territory in isolated community or communities. Some of them were cattle stations that was run and managed, and majority were non-Aboriginal young boys from the East Coast who had homophobia, had trying to find themselves, and they were told that Mary G is coming to the station to talk to you. Imagine the fear and the phobias that was flying around. What? A black drag queen coming. But it turned out to be a fantastic opportunity to be able to talk to people, Indigenous and non-Indigenous, in isolated Australia about binge drinking, sexually transmitted infections, and all the things that affect our Indigenous community in particular, and non-Indigenous. But one of the things that was really moving for me was the rise of trachoma in the Aboriginal community, and it's now the highest in the world, in particular in the Northern Territory. And I felt really proud to be part of that. So just to let you know that from one extreme, I stayed in the community, sleeping in tent sheds, so to speak, and here in Canberra, was pretty scary for me, and I'm very honoured to be presenting here tonight, so thank you very much. First, I want to start with a quote that I found, and to get the theme going here for me. Since the beginning, Native peoples lived a life of being in harmony with all that surrounds us. It's the belief that all humankind are related to each other. Each has a purpose, spirit, and sacredness. It's an understanding of the great spirit of the Creator that we follow these ways. And in this understanding, we believe we are all related to all other living species. And that's a quote from a Native American, Dennis Banks, who's a social activist. Hello everyone, welcome here tonight. And I'd like to firstly thank the National Centre for Indigenous Studies, ANU College of Law and Reconciliation Australia for inviting me to speak tonight. And to present, maybe even exposing myself to you all, not in the manner that Mary G may, but in a way of sharing my life, history and thoughts, and what makes the machine kick over in my body. But first I must acknowledge the Ngunnawal people, whose land I'm privileged to be standing on. One day I'll probably be paying rent here too, and speaking in. Friends, I'm a descendant of the Gidja people, of the Kimberley, and I belong to the Yawandi skin group. This means in the traditional cultural way I belong to a separate group of people in the tribe, and it reminds me of who I am and where I sit in our people's tribe and hierarchy. What does this mean for those who do not know? Well, I like to sum it up like this, and this is how I go around and I tell people. In a traditional state, if I was living in a traditional state, who am I to marry and decided before my grandmother was even born? Now that is a very interesting thought, isn't it? This is a very important point, as this was a very smart way of preventing incest and breeding. This, friends, is engineering. How our Aboriginal people created such a precise process is beyond belief. Not bad for a so-called primitive race or people. Think about this. The ability to socially engineer a system that protected the lineage so that it did not destroy or break down a people through this potential. This process was protected in the bosom of Aboriginal Australia since time immemorial. And then it was smashed by the invasion of European people, culture and colonisation. I've had a mixed and diverse upbringing that has carved me into who I am. This is sprinkled with my originality, with my European connections to good old Irish, my religious upbringing, and my Singaporean Muslim father and Catholic mother, who gave me the hardest love of all by giving me the wisdom, the strength, and vision to have a dream and keep my feet solid on the ground. The elements that make what I am today are the elements that we've been practicing in my hometown of Broome for many years, and the great uniqueness that makes the country a great place. To be able to accept, appreciate, and share the diverse makeup of our country, the diverse religious options, cultures, and languages. My mother is a starting generation woman who was removed at the tender age of 3 years old. Her name is Phyllis Nomini, according to her removal documents. The father's name appears on the document as well, as the name Nomini as a surname. Nomini, or Nami, as is also known, is her skin name. And that was inherited from her mother. Her mother was smart enough to record this on her documents. And this was a code, people, to tell my mother who she is and where she fit in and when she ever wishes to come back and find her people. As Mum was a three-year-old baby, after the fear of leprosy and sores that healed, the doctor said in his own writing, as per documents, "Let's break faith with the child's mother now and send the child directly to Broome." As to send the child back to his mother would only make it harder to remove the child. This was the abuse of woman. Her mother was devastated, her mother was heartbroken, and her mother went to the grave with a broken heart. Mum only met her mother once when she was 18 years of age in a town in the Kimberley called Derby. Her mother, my grandmother, travelled 500 kilometres one way in a derelict car with her husband on a harsh, rough Kimberley road, which is all gravel. But she travelled to Derby to see her daughter that she never saw since the child was stolen from her. After all, my mother's mother, my grandmother, sent my mother to Derby for medical reasons and was betrayed by the system, the government, and the health system. So she went to Derby to meet her daughter for the first time since the child left her at the age of three. However, after meeting her daughter, the colossal damage was already done. The daughter was a stranger. My mother was very excited to meet her mother. But her mother said to her, "You don't belong to me anymore. You belong to the White Hatters." This has been the greatest burden that Mum has carried ever since. The bond between mother and child had been broken. Remember, friends, this is the year of no rights for Aboriginal people, and no rights whatsoever for Aboriginal women. Women were abused and exploited by the many men who had the power of the law, power of the gun, power of authority, and the law of the land on their side. This is part of the story that has carved me into who I am as an Australian citizen. Friends, I'd like to start. I bought a guitar to sing some songs and break the spare time a bit, so I'd like to start with this singing songs written by my mother. I made a documentary for my mother called People Through the Louvers. And she wrote a song titled People Through the Louvers. And this is her story to her children, explaining her pain as a stolen generation person, living a very institutionalized life, looking at the world through her home windows, through her louvers, the only world she knew. My mother grew up in an orphanage in Broome, run by the St. John of God Sisters. My mother is very grateful for the sacrifice and the limited wisdom that she gave from these women, who were like mothers to my mother. This song is called People Through the Louvers. Many migrants seeking a better life. Dad's father was a full Chinese man. His mother, Malay, Indonesian, Arabic. My dad is a Muslim, and he's been a rock in my life and at times a very hard man. He was very well respected in Broome, held a senior position in the pearling industry, being bosun to over 100 men. He cradled the hard-hat divers while they were under the sea as their tender, controlling the lifeline, communicating only with tugs of the rope to each other. He's told me many stories of also nursing divers who suffered from the bends, who died in his hands. He nursed them and they died in his hands. He has many stories like this. I saw him as a hero after hearing these stories. I learned also from him that religion is a personal thing. And it did not matter if you were Muslim, Catholic, Jewish, Buddhist or whatever. There always is one God. We as humans should not be fighting in the name of God against each other. He is so right. He taught me about the racist laws of Australia, that each Pearly Lugger had one Aboriginal person on it. They were brothers out at sea. But when they came back on land, they were not allowed to associate with Aboriginal people. Even the very same lakes, boats, they would have been deported back to Malaysia or Singapore if they were mixing with Aboriginal people. He told them the many kilometres that they worked in the isolated regions in search of water for the pearling boats. The Aboriginal crew members were always the key to finding water, or guiding them to homesteads through harsh country. Aboriginal men were masters of the country. They became the lifeline to many Asian crew members. But that journey back to mainland, to Broome, and the respect of the comradeship had to be dropped and not to be seen in public together. Broome and the Torres Strait were exempt of the White Australia policy to allow the pearling industry to prosper. I grew up believing that everyone is equal. Broome was a great town for this understanding. In the years I grew up in Broome, and history tells us that Broome also had racial differences between the Asians. Being a multicultural community, I grew up appreciating the difference. I also grew up knowing I was Aboriginal. I remember the very first birthday party I ever had, first and last in fact. I was only 10 years old. I didn't even know what it was like to have a birthday party. And I invited my friends to a party. One particular boy who was in my primary school class was generally at the bad end of the class jokes. And I felt sorry for him. I felt compelled to make him feel part of the group. So I invited him to my party. I gave him an invitation and I remember, never forget his response. He said, "Sorry, I do not go to nigger or blackfellow parties." I was shocked as a little boy, as I'd never heard of this kind of language before, and was saddened by him, and saddened for him. So I commenced my journey of understanding about human dynamics and prejudices. I had never disliked anyone, and was always caring for the underdog, or the less fortunate than me. We grew up very poor. We lived off the tidal creeks and the ocean for survival. Our house was a thoroughfare in town. The main road was our front yard, and our backyard was also a bush camp for many Aboriginal families, and my mum and dad cared for all of them. From Aboriginal people who were frowned upon as lower class than the fringes of society, to European hitchhikers. During the cyclone season, my mum and dad took the Aboriginal people and fed them as well as cared for them. This included the hitchhikers, everybody. Mum and dad also took in many Malay men who lived at times in our house. So I had a great diverse experience of people in my life, not to mention foods, aromas, and cultures. As a child, I was always worried about people who had less than us. We had very little, but I had to say we had a lot more than some. I also started my journey into understanding my heritage. I was now on my journey, seeking the meaning of life. What was it about? I was sent away for schooling like most kids of that era, because we didn't have any secondary schooling in the Kimberley. I was sent 2,000 kilometres to a town called Geraldton, then on to Perth to commence an apprenticeship as a boilermaker. I completed my trade, but the journey of a new place, new environment, and meeting new people via being sent away was the most important education, I would have to say, that this is an experience that has changed my life. It broadened my mind and allowed me to break free and learn about me and being me. I met my lovely wife at 17. We were teenage sweethearts. She took advantage of me. And we were parents, teenage parents. I was a dad, still doing my apprenticeship and keeping a family. I was very lucky to find a friend in my life, who's still my wife. and print today after 30 years. She is my rock. I would just like to announce that just over 24 hours ago, we had just inherited a brand new grandson from my youngest son. I look handsome and young for grandpa, don't I? Twice. So grandma, my wife over there, is very proud. Her name is Logan. And his name is Logan, sorry, who also has our older sister, Alia. Friends, I commence my talk with a small brief account of my background to give those who don't know me an insight into who I really am and try and demonstrate the individual, the character that's become the person standing before you. The wonder of my country, and most importantly, the wonder of my originality has been the driving force of who I am. I grew up seeing my people live in the most poor and poverty-stricken environments and always wondered why. As I'm now much older, I understand, and I'd like to share with you here today. I learned much later of my mother not having a family and always wondered who we were and where we came from, who our family was and who we were related to. Family connection was so important to me as a young man. My roots are so important. Then I learned about my mother being stolen generation, and I was sickened in my heart and soul. My love for my country started to reshape itself, and my curiosity for my countrymen got stronger. My mother's father was an Irish pioneer who came to the Kimberley, and we had never met, or he never connected with my mother. My mother was lost. She was not prepared for the rules of life after leaving the orphanage. She met my father not knowing what love was, but indeed, security was what she wanted. They married, and we lived as family with my brothers and sisters. I'd like to do another song, if that's all right.
Mm.
Yeah. Mm. I had a nice must be black over there. They always say, So this song is about trying to find family.
Calling for the roots of my people. Calling, calling, calling for the roots of my people.
Angry. at the state of Aboriginal people's attempts at surviving in this new world. In this world where everything was white and right. So a calling happened inside of me to look towards a positive future by becoming a part of the solution and not to become part of the problem. So my own micro world, within my own micro world, I started doing things that would make a difference. Not for me, but for my community, in particular my Aboriginal community. After being sent to boarding school and in high school, and then into an apprenticeship, I learned that racism was everywhere. And I learned to duck and weave through it all to achieve and make a difference in my life as well as for others. I developed a passion and a dream to play a small part in attempting this country to be accountable for its history and its state. I remember so vividly of a careers night in boarding school for school kids. And I was always fascinated with electricity and electronics. And so I went to a Telstra, who we know as a telecom today, and asked about becoming an apprentice in electronics. I was told by the gentleman not to bother, as there's no such thing as an Aboriginal tradesman. But folks, I was not hurt. In fact, I didn't know of any Aboriginal tradesmen. So I walked away accepting it's normal, it's true. I said to myself, yeah, that is true. I was not affected by the comment, but it was in later life. I also found that in this journey along with the many race people were just as many people who didn't care about race or religion. And they also wanted to make a difference. So I learned very fast that the system and the people in government and in community can make a difference collectively if we all work together. My father gave me hard discipline as a child, as we call hard love. But his Muslim Asian discipline carved me into a person who wanted to stand up and make a difference, with most importantly respect for myself and others. Asians have more rights than Aboriginal people. Attached to this were my mother's pain and her naivety that gave me a very insecure, non-trusting element to my character. But combined, I have to say, they gave me something that means so much to me today, caring for my fellow men, to assist in a process of reconciliation by just doing what I do. So I'm going to ask everybody to join me in the song now. Sorry. But Aboriginal people always say, Pumula Pumula me. It sounds like a negative tone, but it isn't. It's actually a laugh at ourselves. So I want everybody to sing, Pumula Pumula me, okay? Got it? Pumula Pumula me? Mick, you know that, you grew up with them. Okay, just sing along with the melody, it's very easy, just pull up over me, it goes like this. It's actually a Mary G song, so don't anyone tell her. Pull up over me. Pull up over me. Everybody. Pull up over me.
Sit down.
on the Kimberley, a warm evening. She came into my life one night while I was doing radio. She took over the show. She got me removed as a presenter. She became the star. I became the producer. But she instantly gave me the assurance, the only last element that allowed me to prosper with confidence in myself. This woman changed my life forever. Because friends, with all the qualities of what made me, inherited from my mother and father and my roots, believe it or not, I still lack confidence in myself. I'm an introvert. This is the remnants of my mother being removed. This is the thing that kept me from stepping up. But this woman brought a few tons of energy and confidence, as well as social responsibility for our people and their plight, for my country and its journey towards a complete reconciled country. She gave me the greatest gift anyone can give anyone. The power to rise above and follow a dream to make a difference. This woman's name was Mary Jean. Not my wife, not my mother. I've travelled the length and breadth of this nation. I have been seasoned to the Opera House. I've appeared at almost every major venue in this country. I've journeyed into the most isolated and derelict regions of our nation, bringing good medicine with this woman, Mary Jean. I have had national television shows, appeared on national television, travelled internationally, and have continued a very long relationship with radio. I have been recognised throughout the country for numerous awards like National Indigenous Person of the Year and WA Australian of the Year. In fact, tonight I'm supposed to be on radio with Mary Jean, but due to my commitments tonight, a group of isolated radio broadcasters, Brex Crew, will fill in for Mary Jean. This has also bestowed an honour to isolated Indigenous broadcasters to host a Mary Jean. Mary Jean is an honourable aspiration. To provide you with some examples of the positive outcomes of this character, Mary Jean has touched in writing a letter from a lady in Queensland, a suicidal young woman who lived in a violent, abusive marriage. She wrote to me and said, "I was about to commit suicide because I was living in a violent relationship and I didn't know what to do. I came home, turned the radio on, and I was trying to be serious about my pain, and Mary Jean was making me laugh." But Mary Jean was also talking about men respecting their women. So she felt compelled to write and say, "I'm alive today because of you, Mary Jean." Mary Jean has also given therapeutic empowerment to a half a dozen petrol sniffers who came into the studio with their psychologist and said, "Can they speak on the radio with you?" Friends, they're a sad sight, our people, when they're intoxicated with petrol fumes. And they are almost walking zombies. And these six men walked in and sat in the studio in Broome and talked with me on the radio for half an hour. I asked them to speak in their language. I also asked them, as Mary Jean, to tell them, tell the world, tell your community back in Balgo, Warramana, that Mary Jean is beautiful. They did that. They went back to the community as heroes. The psychologist said to me, "Mark, they've spoken more in that 30 minutes than they've spoken in the last 3 months." That's how much they felt compelled and attracted to the character of Mary Jean, and that is the power of the character of Mary Jean. She has empowered the Indigenous community through meaningful words of wisdom. She has given joy to many children. She has given strength and power to elders. And most importantly, she has worked towards closing the gap in isolation before the words were coined. In fact, since 1992. This has been a major responsibility naturally imposed on me. I quote another Native American: "People destroy our sacred sites and take our artifacts and graves, grave goods, destroy our history." This history doesn't belong to Native Americans, in our case, Aboriginal Australians. It belongs to all Australians and the world. Why has Mary Jean been successful? Why has this allowed me to prosper in the currency of well-being? This is because, friends, I'm not a drug user. I'm not an alcohol abuser. I'm not antisocial. The Aboriginal community do not like hypocrites preaching, or people who have changed their lives for the better, because they'll always judge you that you were the worst alcoholic. The Indigenous community generally judges one by their past, not by their future. This is a sad fact, but I'm proud that I'm immune to those sort of subliminal messages when I have a responsibility due to the power and capacity I have with Mary G. Children are sacred, and Mary G has been able to cross all boundaries of our community, from babies, young children, older children, teenagers through to elders. She has been respected by cultural elders in my region, elders who drive our community. This is a very important role that I've had, and as such, and has made, this is a very important role that I've had, and as much as financial returns are part of the legacy of business, the essence of what I do is about making a difference. I share some little stories of myself sitting in the studio in Broome about to do radio. It's 6:30, I go to air at 7:00, and a traditional Aboriginal man walks in and sits down in the studio and says, "Can I talk on the radio with Mary G?" I said, "Yes." I said, "Where are you from?" He said, "I've travelled from Yundamu." Lajumano. I've travelled all the way from Lajumano, 1500 k's from Broome. "I want to talk on the radio with Mary Jean." I said, "Yep, no worries. She'll be in soon." He said, "Can I talk?" He said, "Can I sit in the studio?" I said, "Yes, take a seat." So he sat in the studio and waited. 6:45. No Mary Jean. He says, "When is she coming?" I said, "She'll be here." 5:10. He says, "Are you going to fill in for her before she comes in?" I said, "No, she'll be here on time." I went into the opening promo. Then said, "Hello everybody, it's me, Mary D." He turned white. Looked at me and said, "You're a bloody man." I broke his heart. I did a show in Melbourne at the original community league there, and a room full of people from the community, and I came out singing dressed as Mary G. Went to a table of elders, 10 women, and I watched them all night from the stage, and they didn't smile, they didn't smirk. So I thought, this is going to be tough on me. So I went and decided to sing to them. So I went to their table and sang, and they looked at me and all looked away. No smile, nothing. I thought, well, I'll stay away from them. They obviously don't like what I do. So I sang to other tables. When the show was over, the security came to me and said, "Mark, there's some women who'd like to meet me. Meet you." And I said, "Oh, groupies." And it was these same women that were standing there. So I thought, I'm in trouble, but as elderly women, I have to put my head into the lion's mouth and take the criticism, being a man imposing or impersonating an Aboriginal woman. So they came in. One grabbed one shoulder, another one grabbed another shoulder, another one grabbed a hand, another one grabbed a hand, one started pinching my cheeks, another started feeling my head. What they said to me was, "We came 150 kilometres from the country into the city of Melbourne to see you. We've never laughed so much in our life." I thought these old ladies were on magic mushrooms or something. They said to me, "We haven't laughed since we were young girls. We've forgot how to laugh. You gave us that. I treasure that." When I'm in the Northern Territory, I was at a AGM for all the BRAC stations, and people come in from all over the communities. And the amazing thing is, whenever I'm doing Mary G, men who know me walk up to me and go, look at me in the eyes and go, "Hello." Always look at my breast. That old man, they always look at my breast. Women always want to, "Can I feel it?" But here I was sitting in the studio in the Northern Territory, in Darwin, and all these people from the top end came in, and it's really amazing to watch, because If I'm not dressed as Mary Jean and doing radio, I shift between the character. So I'll give you an example. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Yothu Yindi, and now we've got some handsome men in the studio, and these men, they're stuck in it. Hello, darling, how are you? And they say, oh, Mary, you're really beautiful, Mary. Oh, we really love you, and oh, we're going to take you back home. I've got a big dugong for you, and, you know, they want to give you all this stuff, and you're beautiful, Mary, and, you know, I want to marry you, and blah, blah, blah. Then I say, okay, then, well, look, here's the rugby band, and I play a rugby band song, and they slop back, and they go, yeah, bro, that was deadly. They actually shift character with me. It's really amazing to watch. This year, Mr. Rudd made a powerful speech and made a very symbolic action by apologising with three sorries. This has been the most important part of the missing medicine to allow the country to now move towards reconciliation. This event has given our country the greatest respect throughout the world, in which we as Indigenous people of Australia were very moved by, and that most Australians were also very proud. For the very first time of a nation crippled with a false reflection of our country's history. Our Prime Minister and his colleagues and party have given us back for the first time a little bit of cake, a little piece of the cake of dignity. We came very close with Paul Keating's Red Fern speech. We then went through an absolute disgraceful period of 10, 11 years of shutdown by the previous government. I asked how many of our people would still be alive today if that didn't happen. If we did not get sent off into the wilderness like strangers in our own country, is there any accountability here, or is Aboriginal and Island people still regarded as non-entity at the moment? After 11 years of suffering imposed by the previous government, which has caused major trauma, suffering and pain to our Indigenous community, which also included a total disregard for the plight of stolen generation people. Excuse me. The previous government's refusal to take responsibility, and as the Prime Minister of Australia, to apologise and work towards a reconciliatory change for the nation, which has been 11 years of total disregard for the Indigenous people of Australia. Ironically, our previous Prime Minister then admitted, sometime after, that he was the product of the era of his upbringing that contributed to his ignorance and perspective of our people's predicament. Friends, this arrogance reminds us of the danger this country can find itself in when we have a leader who does not lead for the betterment of all Australians, or in this case, the minority, or even more so, respectfully, the Indigenous people of this country. There's total inconsistency of the Australian political arena to have continuity of direction and to take the leadership from changing governments and forward on through time. A good example, Paul Keating, as Prime Minister, stated publicly that we took the children away, we did the massacres, we broke the fabric of Aboriginal society. He states this, it goes on record, and is then forgotten about when John Howard came into power. 11 years of absolute denial through very calculated wording so as not to incriminate the government or the nation. Folks, to me, this is the denial of justice. How can Aboriginal people move forward when we know that the Westminster system is designed on white lies, deceit and political gain, and not on what's right? The wrong leader, smart enough from a mischievous perspective to strategize and manipulate the nation, to see things his way, allows the poisoning of democracy so that persuasion favours his agenda. This is a very sophisticated form of Mugabeism, dictatorship. This country has failed in the 11-year period. Good leaders and speakers were shut down, and dialogue as we knew it was gone. I cry in my heart for those who fought so hard, Indigenous and non-Indigenous people, who worked so hard since at least the referendum, trying to create change even from the time of the arrival of the First Fleet. We as a nation went backwards. But then Kevin Rudd comes along and gives us a promise of an apology that he did deliver. Opening on Parliament for the first time with a traditional welcome and then the apology. This is what Australia and being Australian is about. Making a positive difference and making the right decision that affects people's lives for all Australians. This is what our present Prime Minister has achieved with the apology. I had a friend in India. India, he doesn't work at a call centre. Whilst he was on holiday. And he said, I left Australia to go on holidays. And guess what? I find your ugly face in the Hindustan newspaper. They're not getting away from you. This apology not only affected our Indigenous community, it affected our nation. It affected the world. The Canadian government has since announced that it will offer an apology to the residential school survivors on the 11th of June. This is a big shift from the previous stance that they would wait for the Truth and Reconciliation Commission to report before making the apology. Since the Commission has not yet started hearings, that report is several years away. A Canadian lawyer who has worked hard for the apology emailed me the other day saying, I think the Australian apology really helped our case. This eludes me with pride, people, to sing another song for you. A song about our two flags, the Aboriginal flag and the Torres Strait Islander flag. You're not getting sick of the singing? We'll be right back. So where to now? Well, compensation is an issue that does need to be considered. It's not about money, it's about the right thing to do. As a late Robert Riley once, one of my greatest mentors said, you can never be wrong if you're right. I know in my heart that what I do is right. I know that many of you people here today know that what you do is right. Otherwise, none of us would be here today. Therefore, to compensate is to give back a sense of dignity. Allow people to purchase or have a home for the first time. A home for the first time. To make a difference for their children. And most importantly, for them to enjoy what life they have left. We as a nation must have a form or an entity that truly represents Indigenous Australia. It becomes the mechanism that advises and stimulates government and the nation to bring the Indigenous people and the rest of the nation into a pinnacle of the true meaning of what we are as Australians. We need each other and we need a united voice to make change. We must be committed to making change. Radical change should not be a thought for the weak-minded. Let's look at the greater picture of making a difference and closing the gap, healing our nation. Let's start by telling our history as it was. Not something that is fabricated so we do not embarrass ourselves or because it's better forgotten or that it's in the past. History is history, and we must own it, good and bad, right and wrong, to allow us to move forward. Remember the universal saying of the Anzac, lest we forget. Indigenous people of Australia are oral storytellers, and so their stories are passed down through generations. Do you think that Indigenous Australians have forgotten the massacres, the abuse, the stolen generations, the multi-million dollar industry called native title justification, the legal aspects and so on? Friends, Indigenous people's biggest weakness is we care, we trust, and we forgive. This has historically left us vulnerable and makes us vulnerable today. So all these negative elements become generational and becomes a disease within us. A great sickness which buries us in the abyss of great darkness so we cannot climb out. Therefore, reconciliation and closing the gap, empowerment and self-sustainability are very important tools that allow our mob to bounce, yes, bounce under the dark place. The misery and pain that we have inherited is a scar within our souls, minds, and is ingrained into who we are as Indigenous people of this country. I stand here before you sharing my history, my pain, my joy as an Indigenous Australian. I also stand and share with you as a fellow Australian. My life and my story is just one of many. And many of you may be thinking, what a great person he is. But friends, we all have a passion. And we all have the ability to make a difference. To make a difference is not about black or white. It's not about choosing to stand up. Sorry, it is about choosing to stand up against the injustices of our people. Indigenous Australia never had a chance from day one. We have a chance today. Us together to make a difference, we must smash down the walls of fear, smash down the out-of-date gatekeepers and policies that govern us. We must allow the sunflower of equality to bloom. Fellow Australians, young and old, Indigenous, non-Indigenous, migrants and visitors, Teresa's height of recognition and accolade, coming for myself from isolated Australia, is a clear indication that anybody can achieve this degree of recognition if one is committed to make a difference within our community. And most importantly, holding up the gallant posture of standing up for our young, proud nation, to assist in the healing of our nation, because a greater force is at work, and we can work together to allow the river of human spirit to flow in a caring and respectful way that brings all of our diversity and differences together, regardless of what language, culture or religion. We must stand together in a great embracement of love for each other as Australians. Things we tend to take for granted in mainstream Australia were taken away from our Indigenous community. But we as a nation can stand proud and together in accepting our history, good and bad, wrong or right, and embrace our history as a true, imperfect nation that has the human heart and spirit to not feel as if it's one's fault or I was not there. But that was a mistake in time, in the development of this nation, by this nation. We as Australians must own our past in order to create a united, equitable future. This leads me to also call upon the federal and state governments to invest in the collection and archiving of oral life stories on video for the prosperity of our nation into the future. Before our elders are all gone, and the essence of who we are as a nation goes with them. We have an abundance of talent and skills to assist in this process in this country within our film and television industry. We are running out of time, friends. Our inclusive history is so important. I share the Wandjina paintings of the East Kimberley, which have been carbon dated between 40 to 70,000 years old. Some people try to say Aboriginal people did not paint it, but Aboriginal people did paint it. They still paint it, and they still worship the great spirit of Wandjina. So we must also learn the greatness of the quality, diversity, and greatness that makes up our Indigenous community. We must learn and record everything before it's all gone. It is criminal that we fail to invest seriously to the collation of Indigenous and non-Indigenous people's stories. We must have on record the understanding of Indigenous Australia's beliefs and sacredness that we are and will lose in the future if we don't, if we do fail this action. Wandjina is alive. I quote a good friend of mine, I never met him, but he's my friend, Richard Gere. If people lose their land, they have nothing. You lose your land, you lose your culture, you lose yourself. Do another song. This one's dedicated to the Wandjina. The picture of a nation that will not tolerate racism, abuse, antisocial behaviour, and most importantly, value and nurture the Indigenous people of our country. I'd like to finally share a bit of aspiration for our Indigenous community, which will flow into our broader community. But just some dot points I've put together. I have a dream that oral history will be a priority to collate for the betterment of our nation's collective history. I have a dream that native title will become a thing of the past in terms of justifying one's own country. I have a dream that compensation for stolen generations' evil will be truly recognised by state and commonwealth. I have a dream that a treaty or some form that has teeth to advise employment and create a prosperous future for all Indigenous Australians. My Indigenous community, let's not be pig-headed as Aboriginal people and put division within our community by causing a divide between traditional owners, stolen generation people, cultural people, intellectual people, successful people, and political spin doctors within our own community. As we have all suffered in many forms and in the name of colonisation, progress and development of our nation. Many of our people have suffered enough since colonisation, and we must move forward now as a nation and heal ourselves and look within for the beauty, diversity and intellect that we have in our communities. If we can overcome this obstacle, we can hold our rightful place as Indigenous people alongside and in arms with our fellow Australians. We as a nation cannot sustain the divide between Indigenous Australian and non-Indigenous Australians. As the longer we leave it, the greater the harm for our future generations, for everyone. Finally, friends and lovers of this country, this nation, for this country to move forward in positive reconciliation, we must embrace everything that is. Everything that is. I could not be here Monday for the Unforgotten Heroes, as I had to stay home and be part of the Sorry Day ceremony on my local level. Otherwise, I'd have got flogged. But we must remember the heroes who have gone before us, who pioneered and allowed us all to move forward in a slow manner, chipping at this great monolith. Chipping at this great monolith of change. I'd like to finish my presentation today, tonight, this evening, with a song which is brand new, and I've never sung it in public before, so you are very privileged. So I hope I get it right. This is the birth of a new song to inspire the youth, remind us of our history, and to bring our country together in a great reconciliatory way. This song is simply called Heroes. We can all be heroes. Last song, folks. Thank you.
and governors. We can all be heroes if we allow ourselves to be. We can all be heroes, young and old. We can all be heroes, every boy and every girl. We can all be heroes if we believe in ourselves. We can all be heroes. Mr. Eddie Marble conquered Terranius. Mr. Neville Bonner stood in the Great Hall. Mr. Charlie Perkins was a great leader. Mr. Rob Riley was a true believer. We can all be heroes if we allow ourselves to be. We can all be heroes, young and old. We can all be heroes, every boy and every girl. We can all be heroes if we believe in ourselves. We can all.
Thank you very much for that, and I got through it. So I'd like to say thank you very much. I'm very honoured that to have been invited to speak here, and I hope everybody or somebody or at least one of you has got something out of it. And just to let you know that I was talking to Mary Dee 2 minutes ago, and she said that she's going to be here for the NAIDOC Awards, which is the National Focus in Canberra. And she's coming with a band, the G-Spots. She's got a few, so it's not a fallacy. And I'd just like to say, finally, that I'm absolutely honoured to have been invited to speak here. So thank you very much, and thanks everybody for tuning in tonight.
My pleasant but distinctly anticlimactic on behalf of all of us to thank Mark and Barker. The title of this annual event is described as a lecture. I have a colleague who can't be here tonight, but he and I have been engaged in a long running academic debate about the value of lectures as a medium for communication, as a medium for education. And I just wish that you could have been here tonight to see what eloquence, and what imagination, and what passion can be communicated through the medium of a lecture. Mark, on behalf of us all here tonight, thank you for an inspiring, thoroughly entertaining, and truly multi-dimensional insight to you. And it's been a privilege to have you share your story with us, to have you share your songs with us. It's been privilege to be able to be part of your backing vocal group. As Lawrence said at the beginning tonight, the annual reconciliation lecture is a critical part of this university's commitment to reconciliation. Mark, your contribution of history to this lecture will truly be remembered. So thank you. Can I ask you all to join me in thanking Martin?